90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today, our guests are Sergeant Jacob Bacina of the Kansas City Police Department and Ms. Michelle Shanahan-DeMoss. Good morning and welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Before we get started, we have an excessive heat one through Saturday. Check on the elderly and those that may not have air conditioning in your neighborhoods. If you need a cooling center, use your local library. Call 211 to find a cooling center near you. The Salvation Army and KCPN are giving out 600 box fans today to help people stay cool during this heat. The fans will be given out at the southwest corner of 18th Street and Paseo this morning from 8 a.m. until 11 or until the supply is exhausted. Officer Bacina, how long have you been with the Kansas City Police Department?
Good morning, Joe. I have been with the KCPD for just over 15 years. I've been a sergeant with them for just over 5 years.
Okay. And Mrs. DeMoss, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm an Independence resident, Independence, Missouri. I have four stepchildren and my daughter, Blair. I'm president of a non-for-profit, Blair's Foster Socks, and a boutique owner in historic Independence, and also a security alarm and residential and commercial business owner.
Every year around the world, many people are injured in celebratory gunfire. Officer Bacina, what is celebratory gunfire?
What we know is around the 4th of July holiday and then again around the New Year's Eve holiday, some people find it to be exciting or thrilling to shoot guns off to celebrate the holiday. And a lot of times they shoot those guns off indiscriminately into the air or at something off in the distance without really thinking about where those rounds are going to end up as they come back down.
A little data on celebratory gunfire. New Orleans, between 1993 and 2000, more than 573,000 rounds were fired into the air. There were deaths and many injuries during this period. The problem of celebratory gunfire, random gunfire, as it's also called, has reached significant proportions in Dallas, Texas. Each year, the Dallas Police Department receives over 12,000 calls on weapons being fired into the air. And in 2011, a United States study in Los Angeles found that 118 people were injured by random falling bullets. 32 of those 118 people died. Officer Bacina, how dangerous is celebratory gunfire?
It's extremely dangerous. A lot of people don't realize that when a bullet is fired up into the air, as it comes back down to the earth, it comes back down at the same velocity. And so it can be tremendously dangerous to property, vehicles, roofs of people's houses, animals, and also people that may be outside whenever those rounds come down.
If you fire a gun into the air, the bullet has no backstop, meaning something that stops it. How dangerous is a bullet fired in this manner?
Extremely dangerous because you can't control where it goes. You have no idea where it's going to end up. The trajectory of it is determined by physics and speed. And that bullet has no name on it. It has no destination other than where it is going to come back down to the earth.
Shooting a gun in the air, we've just established, is deadly. But it was even more deadly, the angle. How critical is the angle part of that equation?
A bullet coming down from any angle can be deadly if it's horizontal or if it is coming back down, straight down to the earth from right above someone.
Studies have shown that if you fire a 9mm bullet at a 45-degree angle, the bullet could travel more than a mile. Physics dictates what goes up must come down. A bullet fired into the air is going to come down somewhere. When you fire a gun into there, it takes 20 to 90 seconds for the bullet to come down, depending on the angle in which it was fired. According to a report by the for Disease Control, 80% of celebratory gunfire injuries are to the head, feet, and shoulders. If a bullet can pierce your skin, it can kill you. A bullet fired into the air can return to Earth between 300 and 700 feet per second. So, Officer Bassini, can shooting a gun into the air injure or kill a person the same as if the gun was pointed point blank at that person?
It absolutely can. It's coming at the same velocity that it would be coming if they were merely feet away and the gun was fired directly at them.
What holidays and times of year are most likely to have celebratory gunfire in our city?
Based on our work and our intelligence gathering with gunfire data with our gunfire detection system that we have called ShotSpotter, we know that around 4th of July holiday, the day or so before or after the 4th of July holiday, and then again after around the New Year's Eve holiday, those are two really big holidays where celebratory gunfire is definitely increased.
Why aren't we having more situations where people are using guns to celebrate holiday occasions? Since Blair's death in 2011, we've had over a dozen situations where people in the metropolitan area have been hurt, their homes damaged from celebratory random gunfire. Why do people just choose to celebrate with a gun?
I think a lot of it, maybe it's two parts. One is maybe people don't realize the danger of it. It's why we continue to do what we're doing this week ahead of the holiday, going around and talking to people ahead of time proactively. In case there's even one person that doesn't realize that it is dangerous and that it can hurt or kill someone, we want to educate people, because if even one person doesn't know that, then you know our job's not done yet. The second thing is that I think there's opportunities for people that know this and that care about this to influence their friends and family members not to do this. And I think that it starts with just a conversation. If you know someone or hear about someone, friend, family member, neighbor, that's talking about getting a gun or is getting their gun to go shoot off to celebrate the holiday, have that conversation with them and tell them how dangerous that could be. It could save somebody's life.
I know you all are, as you were saying, going out talking to people. Mr. Moss, how important is it for people to know about the dangers of celebratory gunfire?
I feel that I'm adamant about letting people know the dangers of it, and that to completely not do it, that once the bullet leaves a gun, it either maims or kills somebody, and if you can find a different way to celebrate, it's absolutely imperative that you do that.
So as we see calls in Kansas City for celebratory gunfire, how many calls on average do you get around the holidays for this type of situation?
Our 911 call system usually gets pretty inundated with calls for fireworks and gunfire around the 4th of July holiday. They have preparations in place to have enough people to answer these calls. Through our gunshot detection system, we identify typically about 2 to 3 times an average weekend will happen over just over the 36 hours around the holiday, the amount of gunfire.
In Kansas City, Missouri, since ShotSpotter was installed, we've had over 8,800 gunfire alerts in the coverage areas. These alerts have resulted in 51 felony arrests, 49 misdemeanor arrests, and 56 firearms recovered, more than 3,000 shell casings recovered. Officer Bassina, do these calls for illegal gunfire slow police response during the holidays when people are doing the celebratory gunfire for response to accidents and other matters where the police may be needed?
Yeah, we have a call prioritization system that deals with life-threatening emergencies first and other calls that may be not in progress after that. We make sure that around the holidays, especially 4th of July, we have plenty of officers working that are available to take care of these things in the order of the call prioritization. Ideally, no one would shoot guns off around the holiday, and we could respond to other emergencies or other life-threatening matters. But we know that it tends to happen, and we're ready for it if it does.
We're thinking people are looking at celebrating this 4th of July. You've had a picnic, and some people may or may not have been drinking. How much does alcohol play a role in people? Well, I'm going to go out. I don't have any fireworks, so I'm going to go get my gun and shoot my gun off.
I wouldn't know to guess any specific numbers on that or anything, but just in my experience in the 15 years I've been in with the police department. You know, I've seen a lot of situations that involve intoxication of some kind, either alcohol or drugs. What we know is that the systems in the body that alcohol and drugs work on to inhibit, you know, good judgment and good reactions, when judgment and reactions are inhibited, it increases the likelihood that bad decisions are going to be made. That's why it's so important to have those conversations with your friends and family members and try to influence them ahead of time before something bad happens.
If a person is caught discharging a firearm under influence, could the charges they face be compounded similar to somebody who's drinking and driving a vehicle?
Each situation is different. It is illegal to fire a gun in the city limits, and that's bottom line, no matter what state of intoxication you're in. After that, it depends on what happens when you fire that gun and what you may have fired that gun at. Each situation, as far as charges, is dependent upon all of those circumstances. But bottom line, just pulling the trigger, intoxicated or not, in the city limits is illegal.
Do we have laws and ordinances that prohibit the firing of a gun within the city limits?
Yes, we do, and they are heavily enforced around this time of year and all times of year, but we're especially attuned to it this time of year because we know the increased prevalence of it.
In researching for this segment, in Kansas City, celebratory gunfire is a city offense. Is that always true?
Pulling the trigger and shooting a gun outdoors is a misdemeanor city-level offense. That's correct. That can be compounded based on the results of what happens whenever you decide to pull the trigger. But on the surface, it is a misdemeanor offense, yes.
I know I've read stories of people in Kansas City Independence having bullets come through the ceiling, bullets come through the window causing hundreds and thousands of dollars in damage. If that damage exceeds a certain point, does it go from that point from a misdemeanor to a felony?
Absolutely. Depending on the amount of property damage, there is a felony level of property damage, and it's not all that much money. It depends on the circumstances of it. But, yes, if property is damaged in the numbers that you indicated there that you've heard of, then absolutely that rises to the level of felony property damage charges.
So what happens in a case where, like in Blair's situation, where somebody is killed or hurt by the gunfire?
Again, each situation is different, and it's up to the prosecutors to determine the appropriate charges in those situations. But causing the death of another person is absolutely an increased charge over something that's a misdemeanor. And so by making that decision and risking doing that, you're risking charges up to and including murder.
I know in Blair's case, the individual was sentenced to prison. Is there a standard term, or is it dependent upon the charge of what the individual is charged with, or what they may essentially plead guilty to?
Yeah, it would depend on what the charges are, what they would plead guilty to, if there's any plea agreement, and then what the prosecutor may or may not work out with a defense attorney. Or if it goes all the way to trial and there's a conviction, it would be up to the judge to determine the sentencing. And each judge has their own kind of sentencing determinations. And there's guidelines, but years in prison is what you'd be facing for making that decision.
Is this a problem that occurs just in one part of the city, or is this something that can occur anywhere in Kansas City?
We know that it occurs all over the city. We focus our efforts we're only three people that go out and do this, and so we focus our efforts in a few specific areas where we know based on gunfire data, we know based on calls for service, there's a high prevalence. But in talking to other people and looking at 911 calls across the city, we know that it happens all across the city.
I know from listening to some of the other interviews, every year you will go out, and Mr. Moss, you will go out and try to educate people on the severity of that, but you take it one step further, use the data from last year to go out, so you're not just shooting it, but you're not just going into the dark. You are targeting those areas and those neighborhoods where the gunfire occurred from the last year. So you're trying to lessen and educate people on it this year.
That's right. We do selective targeting of our door-to-door campaign. We know, based on our gunfire detection system, we know where there was outdoor gunfire last year around 4th of July. we can pinpoint it down very closely. And so we will go around those areas and try to educate people that are living in those areas about the dangers of it, and try to urge them to call 911 to report if they see it, and try to influence their friends, family members, and neighbors to not do it.
Many people may think that I can go outside and fire my gun and the police will have no idea where the bullet comes from. Is that true or false?
Based on our gunfire detection system, we know exactly where it's coming from. Additional to that, we receive a lot of 911 calls for service that give us great descriptions. We urge everyone that sees somebody shooting a gun off to call 911. We know where and when there's gunfire, but we don't necessarily know who it is or where they went afterwards. That's why it's so important, our partnership with the community, for them to tell us, you know, where there's gunfire and when it's happening and who's responsible for it, because that intelligence is really what allows us to get at the heart of it and really stop it and keep it from happening again.
You talk about the gunfire detection system. It has a name. It's called ShotSpotter. Can you discuss a little bit what ShotSpotter is and how it actually works?
Sure, yeah. ShotSpotter is a gunfire detection system we've had here in Kansas City since 2012. It uses auditory sensors in the area to detect the sound wave patterns of gunfire and then triangulate those locations. And then that way police know exactly where to go to investigate gunfire.
How accurate is ShotSpotter?
It's very accurate, down to the feet in most instances, down to less than 10 feet.
How quickly does ShotSpotter allow you to get to a location where shots have been fired?
We get that alert almost instantaneously. In a matter of seconds, we get that alert after the gunfire.
So you essentially get the alert before the person has the time to even call 911.
Yes, the alert, you know, we have officers that have the alert, our dispatchers have the alerts, and we know about it right then. And so that alert, like I said, gives us the where and when. And then when someone calls 911 to report it, they tell us who did it, where they went, what vehicle they were in, all of those kind of things. So it's that real combination of the partnership with the community that makes it very successful.
So what we're talking about is essentially real-time technology that the officer is not waiting to be called and told where the gunfire was in his car or on his mobile device. Officers in that region or that patrol area can be directed to where the shot was. So they're basically getting that information real-time and being able to go out and in some cases maybe catch the people still in the yard reloading or different things.
Oh, that's correct, yeah. They're able to get there, depending on how far away they are, you know, very quickly. And not only catch the people, but also render aid if there's someone unfortunately struck by gunfire. They can get that aid, that life-saving aid there even quicker.
I know that's one of the things that was talked about at the Gunfire Summit was how important it is and how the Kansas City Police Department has partnered with Truman to do the tourniquet program, which helps save the lives, because in some cases you all are the first responders and you get there before anybody else, and that first responder essentially in some cases saves lives.
That's correct. You know, in a situation where we are called to the scene of a gunfire incident, the police are always the first ones in because we have to ensure the safety of the overall situation. We're responsible for the safety of the EMS workers as well, as they come in to render aid. And so we have to ensure the situation is safe and then bring them in. And while we're ensuring the situation is safe, many times if we encounter someone who has been injured, then, you know, we have training and equipment through tourniquets and other life-saving measures that we've been trained on to render that aid almost immediately once we've ensured the safety of all the other people around the scene.
And for our listeners may not know how important that is, a person can bleed out or extenuate within 2 minutes, depending upon where they've been hit. And that's why it's important for our police and first responders to be trained and to have those tourniquets, because those tourniquets save lives and they give those people a fighting chance to get to the hospital where doctors can work to repair whatever damage may or may not have been done.
That's correct. Seconds count. Every second counts in those situations, and seconds can save lives for sure.
So if you have any questions for Officer Bacina or Mr. Moss, please give us a call on our studio line. Our number is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. How does the ShotSpotter technology, what is it based on? What actually makes it work, and what does it need to be able to, it takes the human element out and allows people to be able to not have to worry, they don't have to worry about calling 911, meaning they can seek shelter, and then after the gunfire may have been ended, then call 911, but you all already have the information by that time.
Yeah, we would have the information of the location. Again, we urge people to call 911 and report what they've seen or what they've experienced, once their safety is ensured, of course. If someone is unfortunately experiencing a gunfire event, seek shelter, seek cover, seek safety. But please do report that to 911, because some little piece of information might be helpful to us, a vehicle or a person that you saw involved in it. We're already going to be on the way because we know the where and the when. But we also need to know the who in order to completely solve a crime such as that.
Is ShotSpotter technology advanced enough to be able to distinguish between powerful fireworks, say M80, and gunfire?
The sensing technology in the sensors has been calibrated based on the algorithm that the sound wave pattern makes for gunfire. So it does have the capability of differentiating between a car backfiring, fireworks, or a loud dumpster being set down behind a building or something like that.
How effective of a crime prevention tool is ShotSpotter in neighborhoods where random gunfire occurs?
Well, it's hard to put exact numbers on it because crime is a multifactorial process. There's a lot of things that go into crime going up or down. But having the knowledge almost instantaneously of where and when gunfire is can absolutely help get police to a scene quicker and get EMS workers to a scene much quicker. And so just across the board, you would have to think that having that technology would make a neighborhood safer in the unfortunate event of a gunfire incident.
So, Mr. Moss, how important is it to get Blair's Law passed, the law that you're advocating for on behalf of your daughter?
I'd say very important, and it's something that from 2011 we started working on it, and each year I keep trying, but it continues to help educate and raise awareness, so I continue to do that.
I know California, Texas, Arizona, and Ohio all have state laws that outlaw firing gun in the city and have raised it from a misdemeanor to a felony. As you said, you've been advocating for 7 years and we're still working to get it. I know it made it farther last year. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened last year and how far it's actually made it in the state legislation law process?
We've made it all the way to the door of the Senate, and we will start again when session begins in the fall. And really, after testifying and being able to share my story and, opening some eyes to the bill, and it's gaining momentum.
I know State Senator Jamila Nasheed was just on talking about the need in St. Louis, and that was one of the things that was covered in the gunfire summit, is that in St. Louis, incidents of gunfire murders have now topped 250 per year. And in Kansas City, we've continuously broken the 150 per year threshold. What can we do to make our cities and communities safer from acts of gunfire?
I think a lot of it comes from education ahead of time and really working with, what we know is a lot of gunfire events happen not as a result of a long-term plan, but as a result of a short-term disagreement or a heated argument. And having the plans in place for conflict resolution, I guess, would be, what I would say. Having those plans in place ahead of time and, talking to our kids, talking to our neighbors and friends and family members ahead of time before they are involved in a incident where they feel like it is a survival incident and talking about ways to diffuse situations and de-escalate situations other than to grab a gun and go shoot.
You're so right. And if you have a conflict with your neighbor, if you have a situation and you and your neighbor can't talk, I'm a former neighborhood president. I'm mediating one right now between two neighborhoods. But we have an organization in Kansas City called the Center for Neighborhoods. And they work also with conflict resolution to help it. But they also, there's another organization located at 6285 Paseo that they also work with people to help you squash the beef or whatever disagreement you may have with someone in a non-threatening, neutral capacity. So before you take the law into your own hands and pick up that gun or do something else, call someone in to help mediate. It's a free service. They're working now with in schools to help stop fighting in schools and different things when students have disagreements where they can sit down and work it out and talk it out. And that is something that, as Officer Bastien said, that's a forgotten point here, that we're not able to sit down and talk about what's going on. We're just reacting to what's already happened. But one other thing that we're missing in this point is what happens from the trauma behind this, if it's a shooting, to the family that's left behind, and how difficult of a time they have. How important, Officer Bastien, is it to help the families through the situation in the most difficult time?
You know, it's very important. You know, no one prepares for the what you're going to feel for when you go through the process of losing a loved one. No one prepares for that. There is no way to prepare for that. And so having that relationship, you know, ahead of time and having that just, you know, that empathy for the situation, because the, you know, the worst thing someone can experience is losing a loved one or family member. And bringing the person to justice that's responsible for that is one of our highest callings as a police force. And so that relationship with that surviving family member is key, because many times they are often able to give us information or provide for us a little bit of insight into what may have gone wrong that caused that death. And we sometimes those little pieces of information are what we need to solve a case. And so that relationship and really partnering with those family members that have lost loved ones is key in those situations.
Yeah, so correct, because it's the ones that are left behind that have to deal with the trauma from the situation and the incident. And in some cases, people may never get over that, so they definitely have to have help to do that. Ms. DeMoss, you've worked with the Kansas City Police Department now for over 7 years to educate people on the importance of celebratory gunfire. Do you think at this point that there's anything else or there are next steps that can be taken to help decrease these numbers year after year and make our community and our neighborhoods and our city safer?
I just truly believe the relationship and education and, you know, being part of your community and knowing who your neighbors are and moving to have a better relationship with all of those people is key to that.
I know that many people go home, they close their doors, they don't talk to their neighbors. But also, most neighborhoods have neighborhood associations. I know the police department, we have next door neighborhoods, and the police department works on next door. And this is something that we put out on next door about the dangers of celebratory gunfire. But also, maybe look at going to neighborhood meetings starting in June, sending out information, email bullets, and letting people know to be announced at the meeting what things are, you know, good for the 4th of July and those things that are definitely not good for the 4th of July. And that, you know, taking your gun out on 4th of July or New Year's is not one of those things that you really want to do. And because as we keep reiterating, what goes up must come down. And we have no control over where it comes down, how far away it can come down, or the damage it will do when it comes down.
Yeah, you're absolutely right when you're hitting on the neighborhood associations and our relationship as a department with the neighborhood associations and the residents. That's been something, you know, very exciting in the last year. Chief Smith has instituted, he's basically doubled the amount of community interaction officers that we have at the police stations. We have one for the day shift and one for the evening shift. And so for about 20 hours a day, there's someone that is responsible for those that relationship with the communities within the patrol division and building those relationships and bringing that education to those neighborhood associations. He's also instituted a program of social workers to interact with the public to help bridge the gaps of those needs that some in our communities may experience. And so we really have a focus as a department of neighborhood outreach. And so that's something we're working towards. And we're very excited as a department for what we've done so far and what's to come in the near future, too.
We just had a caller, but they didn't want to go on air, but they wanted to ask the question, is it illegal to use a blank round in firing off for the holidays? And that's kind of a interesting.
I have never been asked that question. I would have to imagine that it is not, because you're not shooting a projectile. You're just making a loud noise. However, I will point out that in the city limits of Kansas City, fireworks are also illegal all the time. And so I would have to do some further research on that. That was a good question.
I would also say this, is that having been through the Citizens Police Academy we have here in the city, an officer has a split-second reaction time, and the officer does not know that you're not using live ammunition because there's still going to be the flash at the end of the muzzle. You will have everything. You'll have the explosion. You'll have everything except for the projectile coming out, and it could be a situation where that could cost you your life because you're... To them, it's a gun, it's a reaction, and there's something, there is the explosion, just, but they don't know the bullet's not in there.
Yeah, well, I can't tell you 100% that it's legal or illegal because I've not ever been asked that, and I'm not super familiar. I can tell you 100% that it's not a good idea.
Yes, that's not, that's not a way I would want to test my 4th of July. To figure out what, there were just blanks in the gun, so they kind of don't know that. But you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And we're having a discussion today on the dangers of celebratory gunfire. So we're going to take a short station break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we're back. So the kind of question that left us stumped here was about the blanks. Officer Bassini, you have an answer for that. Can you give our listeners that answer?
Yes, I do. According to Municipal Code 50-263, which covers discharging firearms generally, I'll skip ahead to the part. It shall be unlawful for any person within the limits of the city to shoot or discharge any gun, revolver, air rifle, or air gun, pistol, or firearms in any description, whether it is loaded with powder or ball or shot or with blank cartridges. So that the caller's question, it would in fact be illegal to discharge a firearm with a blank round.
So now we have an answer to that question. And we've got a caller on line one. Caller, Jack, can you tell us what part of town you're calling from and what your question is for Officer Pacino and Mr. Moss?
Yes, good morning. Call me Shawnee.
Okay, go ahead. What's your question?
Yeah, a question. A young man, I think African-American young man, I think his name is Antoine Rose, was shot and killed by a police officer this week. How does the police officer think he's going to get cooperation of the African-American community when so many videos are out there evidencing murders by police of African-Americans? Thank you.
Thank you for your caller.
Yeah, thanks for that question. I am not familiar with that case, so I would hate to comment on that, not being familiar with that case. But rest assured that we as a police department work tirelessly to build relationships in our community. We are doing things every day to build relationships and to make our communities a better and safer place. And those investments are key in situations where unfortunately an officer has to defend themselves or protect another's life. Those relationships we have ahead of time are key in those situations.
Well, and I've researched this a little bit. The young man, they have some partial disposition at this point. The officer has been detained and put into custody. He was just newly on the force. He'd just been sworn in for an hour that day before he went out and discharged the weapon. The young man got out of the car, didn't have any gun. He didn't have any weapon. And so, I mean, it's a situation that sometimes the good things happen and sometimes people make mistakes. And, you know, I learned a lot when I went down to Ferguson the weekend of Michael Brown's funeral, and the community came. What was portrayed on CNN, what was portrayed on different news media outlets was totally different than what was there. I went down and I sat in front of the market before it was burned down with a member of the NAACP and helped people get people vote to vote. I walked the steps that he took from there to the Canfield apartment complex. But it was the community there that kept that from going into way different than what it could have been. The pastors there were highly identified in orange shirts. They were working with the police. So in some cases, bad things do happen. But it's a matter of what happened, what decisions are made by the adults in the room when those bad things do happen.
Yeah, and, you know, as a police department, we take our oath and we take our responsibilities very seriously. And protecting the public by having to use force to respond to resistance in certain situations is something we take very seriously. And it should be highly scrutinized. It absolutely should be. And in instances where deadly force is used to protect ourselves or someone else, those undergo a thorough review from our partners at our county prosecutors, state-level prosecutors, and our federal partners as well. And so each one of those situations is different, but we take each of them very seriously.
Officer Bacina, with the increase of random gunfire and injuries in the Kansas City area, has the Kansas City Police Department ever thought about offering reward for those who are shooting guns in the air? The city of Redwood, California, where ShotSpotter test was done, offered a $500 reward for tips for those firing guns in the air, and the incidence of celebratory gunfire went down immediately. This could be similar to the Crime Stoppers program, where we offer tips for homicides that could save lives and keep people from being injured in our city.
Yeah, our Crime Stoppers program, the phone number, you've probably heard it many times, but I'll say it again. It's 474-TIPS. And we solicit anonymous tips at that phone number. There's also an app, a phone app, or you can go online as well. And the rewards for that has now doubled up to $10,000 for information leading to arrest of a felony crime. And so it doesn't have to be necessarily just homicide. You can give tips in all sorts of different things. And so we invite, you know, people to use that anonymous resource if they so choose.
Ms. DeMoss, when Blair was injured by celebratory gunfire, did you hear any shooting in the neighborhood? Was there any cause for panic in that situation?
No, we were on 19 acres, so while it was happening, I would never have been able to differentiate gunfire and fireworks. And the kids were doing smoke bombs and sparklers, but in the distance I could hear fireworks, but understanding now some of that was gunfire.
So, Officer Bacina, how far away were the individuals in Blair's case where the bullet was fired from where the bullet landed?
They were over 1,000 feet away. So that's more than 3 football fields.
So that is a lot. How many, when you all went out to the scene, how many rounds were discharged, shell casings were recovered at the scene?
Yeah, there were more than 50 rounds and shell casings recovered there at that scene.
Officer Bacina, officers first thought it was a fireworks incident. How were they able to trace that incident back to over 1,000 feet away?
We have some really, really, really skilled and talented crime scene technicians. And through ballistic evidence and, you know, mathematical science, with these really smart people, we're able to trace it back to the area where the gunfire originated.
I know in that situation there were, I think it was 3 gentlemen out there. So in that situation, you can't tell who pulled the trigger. Does it then go back onto who owns the gun at that particular point?
Yeah, each investigation would be different, but the owner of the gun, or depending on evidence at the scene or witness accounts, obviously the person firing the gun would be the one most responsible for injuring somebody. But there are different levels of charges depending on who was in possession of the gun, who owns the gun, and so on. But each situation is different.
So something to kind of be aware of, that even if it's you're not there, but it may be your gun, that you could be held liable for something that is possibly done with that gun if it's not a weapon that's been reported stolen.
Yeah, each situation is different, but there are definitely possibilities. So what I would urge everyone to do is, if they own a gun, be responsible for the safety of that gun and know who is around it and who has possession of it at all times.
So, Mr. Moss, how important is it for... We talked about this. This law just can't get past this point. This is an election year, and things happen in an election year that don't happen at any other time. That we make this a part of the conversation with those that we're going to send to our state to represent us.
Oh, I think it's very important, regardless of election year or not. I will continue persevering. Blair is the 50th homicide of 2011, and we're getting ready to, it'll be the 7-year anniversary this year, and continuing to raise the awareness and continuing to have the conversation. It doesn't go away for me as her biological mother, but for the crime that continues of celebratory gunfire, it's not stopping. So as each year turns, or for a term to end and somebody new to come, I absolutely want to be at the door to advocate for the possibility of the law being passed, but again, to continue the education for stopping it altogether is very important.
And then know that those that are elected or those that are currently serving have the ability to pre-file bills. So how important is this, one of those bills that is pre-filed, so it's on the table before the session even starts?
And I'm happy to say that I believe that is actually going to happen this year for us. So Representative Duran McGee is carrying the bill, and it's moved towards the Senate. But, again, we have to start again at step one. And so we will do that, but the people are aware and are in place to help move things forward more positively this fall.
So we're a 7-year journey essentially has to restart. So now we start the process again of re-educating the senators, re-educating the legislature on what the dangers are and how we could begin to make a difference and make a change and save, so that we don't have a next young child that is killed like your daughter was killed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's common sense legislation, and, you know, I will just keep talking about it and knowing that it's being heard. And really, our world has changed so much in 7 years, and to keep on this one point is very important. But the support has also gained momentum.
And in places like when it happened in Arizona and when it happened in Ohio, those bills were put in within a year. So we're still 6 years. We're 6 years past that. So now we can hope that this year we can get some bipartisan support, so that everybody will see the dangers of this. You know, with Senator Jamil and Nashila discussing about what's going on in St. Louis and what they need there, that Kansas City and St. Louis can come together. But it's also not just a Kansas City and a St. Louis issue. If you live in the rural areas, you know, people may go. I've lived in rural Missouri. People will go out and fire a firearm, you know, different things, have different celebrations and festivals. So it's something that all Missourians and people that live in Missouri should be concerned about.
Absolutely.
So, Officer Messina, how do we continue to get this word out? I know you all are working today. You're going to go out and do some canvassing. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what that's going to entail, and maybe what area you're going to be involved in?
Yeah, absolutely. So this will be the third year in a row that we've done this. Again, we've gathered information based on where we know there was gunfire last year. And we will be out and about this afternoon and this evening, and then again tomorrow at the same time. We're going to try to meet as many people as we can, and we're going to tell them about the dangers of celebratory gunfire if they don't know already. We're going to ask them to report to us through 911 over the holiday if they see somebody, or going forward, if they see somebody shooting a gun off outside. We ask that they call 911. And then we're going to ask them to have a bit of courage and try to use whatever influence they have with friends, family members, neighbors, to have a conversation ahead of this holiday and make a pledge not to shoot a gun off to celebrate this holiday. We're going to ask them to do that, too. We know that just one conversation may be the difference between life and death, and so we're going to have as many conversations as we can over the next couple days.
Mr. Moss, you've started a foundation called Blair's Foster Socks. What was the inspiration for this organization?
Blair's Foster Socks is Blair's project. So just the Wednesday before she was shot, she named her project and circled it on the top of the paper. We were a foster family, and so she understood firsthand what it was like to welcome somebody into our home and to make a difference, but that difference was a short time that we had. And so really the socks are something small but significant that help carry us across the threshold to empower and uplift children that are living in distress situations.
So Blair's Foster Socks, I was reading on the website, she said it troubled her to see children when they came to you that they wouldn't have socks.
Yes, absolutely. Not only socks. Socks were just at 11. It was picking one thing, you know, that I could do a project that I could make a difference. But she was projecting ahead to what would have been her 11th and 12th grade year of high school, for what would have been her silver or gold award for Girl Scouts. So we have evolved as a charity in how we give and how we embrace people. But for a child that can reach into their own closet or their own drawers or their own piggy bank to do something to uplift somebody that really the situation, she was too young so many times to really understand the situation of what was happening, but to do something small in such a short time was empowering for her, and we saw a change in her in a very short time of understanding and embracing that.
If people would like to learn more or to donate to the organization, is there a website where they can get more information?
Yes, it's blairsfostersocks.org.
Okay. So there's information that you can get about a young girl's vision and dream and how her vision and dream can impact and help others who don't have. So it's something definitely worth reading. When I met you at the gunfire seminar, we were sitting at the back at the so-called, you said, bad people table, so I didn't think.
Bad kids table.
And then the media and everybody else sat there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things that's it's an act of God, because nobody knew who was going to be sitting at what table.
Absolutely.
And you gave me the card with the information, and on the back of the card I received, you talked about organ donation. Out of something bad, something good came. Can you talk a little bit about that and why people should be organ donators and should be organ donation recipients, and how can it impact and help others?
Yes, Blair donated 6 organs, giving the gift of life to 5 people, which, again, as you can imagine, a mother of an 11-and-a-half-year-old, that is something that I would never have thought I would be in that situation. But knowing the love and the kind heart of Blair, it became a decision that was made. And actually, this morning on my way here, I received an email communication from Blair's liver recipient, and she was reaching out to me because this is not only the anniversary of Blair going before us, it's the anniversary of her receiving Blair's liver, and she is celebrating her and also mourning her and uplifting me at this time. So on the 7th of July is when Blair's recipients received her organs. And really advocating for that, I advocate for the conversation from young to old to share the decision. I hear a lot of times people have signed their driver's license and they think that is it. But to be in a situation like I was and to have that conversation, you know, it's not an easy decision. It's not a place I really hope for anybody to be, but on the other side of it, I have spent countless hours with recipients from Missouri and Kansas and throughout the United States and even farther away, Australia. It is amazing to embrace the gift of life and to share it.
So as we wind down, if there was one thing that you could tell people, in addition to about celebratory gunfire, but also the importance of being an organ donator, what would that be?
Really to be the change that you want to see, be the change that is needed in our communities. And a gun is not a toy. They call it a weapon, and you know, I really have no place in saying what it is personally used for by the person that owns it. But on the 4th of July, anytime, it's not something that is used as a toy. It's not something that's used as a noisemaker. And, you know, if you see a crime or if you hear gunfire, trust by reporting it to the authorities, by calling the police departments, and not posting it on social media and talking about it. Really, a difference is made.
So, Dr. Pacina, any last words from you for Kansas City residents about the importance of this 4th of July holiday and the things that they should and shouldn't do?
I think Michelle really summed it up very well there, but I would second that. Please, please, please do not pick up a gun this weekend, next weekend, any weekend. Use it as a toy, use it as a noisemaker, or use it as a conflict resolution device. Please urge your friends and family members the same. And call us, call 911, and report if people are doing this so that we can stop them.
I would like to thank Officer Pacina and Mr. Moss for being our guest today on Cowtown Conversations. We never end Cowtown Conversations without our community minute. We're having excessive heat through Saturday evening, 7 p.m., so check on the elderly and those that may not have air condition. If you need a cooling center, use your local library, call 211 to find a cooling center near you. If you know of a senior citizen or someone disabled that does not have an air conditioner, contact Bishop Sullivan Center and ask about Project Elder Cool. Project Elder Cool helps elderly and disabled find refuge from the deadly summer heat. They help residents in Missouri and Kansas. If you're online, go to Bishop Sullivan, that's BISHOPSULLIVAN.org, or call them at 816-231-0984. The elections are coming up here August the 7th, and you can now in Missouri register to vote online. To get more information or to register online, go to kceb.org or call 816-842-4820. You can register online using a smartphone, a tablet, a touchscreen device. The deadline for the August 7th election is July 11th, so if you haven't registered to vote, you can now go online to vote. New Year's and 4th of July are dangerous periods when people can be hurt by random gunfire. Bullets are not greeting cards. Celebrate without firearms. Every bullet fired up must come down. Firing a gun into the air will not only kill the person who can not only kill the person who fired the gun, but can be deadly to anyone that lives within a mile. Finally, for those of you in your home that you hear gunfire, know that you're not completely safe until after 2 minutes until after it's passed since you've heard the last shot. Don't let your holiday celebrations end at the death of someone. Don't use guns to celebrate the upcoming holiday. Join us next Thursday, July the 5th, as we have our financial expert from Exceeds Expectation, Ms. Marilyn Chappelle, back with more straight talk about ways to save money and get your finances in order. For Cowtown Conversations, I've been your host, Joseph Jackson. Have a great day, and stay tuned for My Place with Larry J.